This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
I would like to formally on air give an apology to Shelby for sending her texts, you know, just like as if normal things were happening before I really realized the full impact of the L.A. fires.
I know. It was like I was sitting there like, when is Matt going to ask me if I'm okay? I got texts from great aunts I haven't spoken to. Freaking my mailman was like, hey, heard about the fires. Are you okay? And Matthew was nowhere to be seen. Pretty upsetting.
I saw the... I saw the news that obviously that there was fires, and but I only sort of saw it like tangentially.
I feel
like every year there's some sort of fire in like California, and usually they're not like, you know, it's like they're the further aflung from the city. And so in my mind, I just sort of like saw the headline, dismissed it, moved on, didn't really think anything of it. And, you know, sort of how like
you're
the
like,
same
whatever. Miley Cyrus might lose her house again. No big deal.
Right, exactly. And it's like, I know where you live. So I'm sort of like, oh, like not near the section that normally catches fire. Like whatever, she's fine. And then it was only later, I think after texting you, that I was like, or when you posted something or another,
yeah.
And I was like, wait a second.
The flaming.
I need to go back. Right. I was like, I need to go back and like relook at this. And then I was like, oh crap. Like these fires are actually like in Los Angeles. Like, and then the smoke and people having to evacuate and whatever. And I was like, okay, now actually let me send text to all the people who I know who live in LA because I am woefully late to this. In my mind, it was sort of like when. You know how, like, occasionally living in New York, you'll get a text from somebody that's like, oh, my gosh, like, are you okay? And you're kind of like, wait, what? And they're like, I saw a crane fell and killed 10 people. And you're like, oh, the crane was in Staten Island. Like, I never go there. Like, thank you for reaching out. But I truly had no idea that this was happening. And in my mind, that's what was going on with the fires. I did not realize that the fires were more of sort of a, like, 9/11-esque.
Apocalyptic.
Like, this is involving everybody.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, it's okay if you didn't reach out. I honestly have just been shell-shocked, and I haven't really processed it. I don't have much feedback on it, but it was a very stressful time. We were in an evacuation zone for the Eaton fire, but we were able to like make it out pretty quick. Like we saw the fire like 15 minutes after it started, and we were like, that's too close. And so we left and got a hotel for the week. Very privileged, very lucky, very
where did
nice
you stay?
To be able to do that.
Joshua Tree, Palm Springs.
We drove through the mountains just to play with fire, literally. No, we just aimlessly drove like south and ended up in Anaheim area, which I think is where a lot of people wound up just because there's so many hotels around there and it's sort of like far enough away without feeling like if things didn't turn out serious, you could still get back pretty easy. Mm-hmm. But it did turn out serious and... my hotel room did double in price by the end of the week, but like, whatever, we're not going to call it price gouging, I guess, but it felt like it and it's fine. We made it back and now we're just running air filters and staying inside and hoping all the fear mongering around it's 9/11 air quality all over again. You're going to get cancer in 20 years and die. Doesn't affect us. Like, you know, we're just in denial. And I'm okay with that at this stage of the disaster recovery process.
I'll say this as someone who had cancer. you have no idea what it's from when you get it. So it's like, could it have been from Diet Coke? Like maybe
unclear
for me. But I'm not gonna like sit back and go through everything I've done in my life and be like, well, that might have caused the cancer. No idea.
Your cancer doctor's literally here, like, no.
You're not.
We know what you got this match.
If it's from the fires of 2025, and also, like, will you live to see? Will the Earth be around that
exactly.
long?
Exactly.
Like, so we can't.
It doesn't seem like it. It really doesn't. It's like, oh, okay. So it's like eat, drink, and be merry, because, like, literally in 5 years we'll be dead. So yeah, taking my Bible lessons to heart.
Focus on much more important things, such as the 2025 film slate. You know.
Yeah. Exactly. No, I agree. I think this is the only thing that's getting me through it. Like, if I'm honest, it's looking at the 2025 film lineup and being like, wow, this looks like a great year for film.
It's like, does it? It does. No. I feel like every year I look at the lineup and have the same feeling, which is oh, there's three things in here that I'm really excited about. There's a bunch of big blockbuster things that seem terrible. There's weird sequels. Yeah. There's some auteur projects that, like, barely have titles that we have no idea what's going on with. But the truth is, most of the movies that are actually going to be good, we don't even know are a thing yet. So,
well, I don't know. Last year we predicted Mother's Instinct would be great, and we were wrong. So,
and
I think
that movie did not really even come out. Like, it came out, but it didn't.
Have you even seen it yet?
No, I have. I have not.
It's streaming now.
I know it is, something. But I'm like, it's.
Well, that's what was funny is looking back. So this is our, like, what, seventh annual time doing this, like, preview roundup. And we pick our 10 most excited for and our 5 least excited for films and guess their Rotten Tomatoes score, because that is, as all film aficionados know, the end-all be-all score of rating. So if you wish we went off of Metacritic, sorry. Rotten Tomatoes just has a better user interface. But it was truly a lineup last year. And you know what? I've gotten so good at this. Like, I honestly was like, wow, Shelby adds another one to her perfect score. Like, I freaking, it's not a competition, but I freaking slaughtered you. Like, I got like 17 out of 25 right. And that's not including some of the ties we had. So I just want everyone to hear this, that Shelby, Miss Nobody is better at analyzing film metrics than film journalist Matthew Huff. So,
Okay.
I just needed that on the record.
If there's one thing we know about me, it's I'm bad at math. This is a numbers related thing. It's hard for me to do, you know, it's like I'm trying to do fractions and stuff while I'm on the podcast live on air. It's very difficult.
It's too much.
And, you know, sometimes I get things incorrect. But
yeah,
it's
no,
not
for sure.
I
mean, one of our biggest gaps.
My math is bad, you know, like I knew, but I didn't get the number right. if that you know, like, that's basically how it is.
One of our most controversial, like, farthest apart ratings was for Mufasa the Lion King, which
oh gosh,
we saw, you said it would get 94%.
I did.
Yeah, you were like, you know what, it's not for me, but I think it'll do great. And I said 35, so it was more in the middle. It's sitting at 57 right now. So, you know, I did not run the numbers on that because I don't believe in math, but I do believe I'm still closer. Like, I still won that one, you know, even though I was under. And then I also thought it was hilarious. What do you think? So this is another one where I clearly swept. This is me now starring J-Lo from from February. Guess what the Rotten Tomatoes score is?
Like 35.
It is 75 right now. So that's like, that's why people think Rotten Tomatoes is bullshit, because things like that happen and you're like, wait, what's the math on that? I honestly can't explain it, but it is fresh. So
I mean, I never watched that, so I can't really speak to
it. Oh, it's not worth it. It's bad. I don't know how.
I did interview Jennifer Lopez recently, so there's that. That happened,
Well, you should have watched it to prepare. And then I think the worst we've ever done, like, historically, Do you want to guess what movie we both gave significantly higher scores to than what it ended up being?
From this past year.
Yeah, from this past year.
So something that we thought was going to be good that ended up being really bad.
Yeah, like good-ish, like medium score, completely like tanked.
Okay. I'm like, what was really bad? Oh, Madame Web?
Yeah. Rudely, Madame Web is sitting at 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That is not fair because Madame Web is the definition of a so bad it's good movie.
Yeah.
And that is something that not enough people have nailed in Hollywood as of recently.
I agree. I completely agree because like,
I can't remember what all we talked about last year on this episode, but I'm willing to bet that I like Madame Web more than I like half of the movies that we ranked.
Well, speaking of Joker, you were very excited about. So I don't know. I actually was like looking and seeing how many of the ones we said we'd like, we'd actually like, and we both ended up about at 5 out of 10. So,
okay.
So, you know, not bad, but like we're not great at guessing what will actually be our favorites. Yes. But again, that plays into the fact that we're running on a limited announcement lineup at this point. So we'll give ourselves a little grace.
It's tricky because it's like you have these things that are going to come out early in the year where we know more information about them now because, you know, we have trailers and such. But those are usually like the worst movies, which I feel like we are sort of looking at optimistically, but are usually bad. And then the stuff later in the year, we have really no intel on other than just like vibes and a lot of cases. So it's like, oh, well, Joker 2 has Lady Gaga. I like Lady Gaga. Great. Perfect. Like Joker 1 had a really good Rotten Tomatoes score. Like this is probably going to be great. Like we have no idea. I feel like at that point that it was going to be like,
I mean, I had an idea. I did a pretty good guess at that.
And, you know, okay, Shelby. Okay.
But anyways, I'm excited to see where we end up this year. As always, there are a couple that we mentioned last year that ended up being pushed to this year.
Yes.
So we'll get to revisit that. But also, as usual, I think I have a lot at the top because I'm more forgiving of the dumpuary films. and Matt will dominate the second half as we get into award season. So
yes.
Doing our part to represent all sides.
Right.
Because this week, there's two movies that I'm excited about. One is Love Me, which is that weird A24, Kirsten Stewart, Steven Yeun, like the long after humans have died on the planet, a buoy in the ocean falls in love with a satellite in space. And the only way they can communicate is through like, I don't totally understand, but like faking a YouTube channel or something. I don't know. It's actually not doing that well, but
well,
I'll probably see it.
I definitely will be seeing it. I mean, I love Kristen Stewart and I also love Steven Yeun. I think what it is that a buoy uncovers sort of like old YouTube videos of this couple and then are trying to like use that to create like personalities for itself and the satellite. From the trailer, I don't think it looked good, but it did sort of look interesting.
Yeah.
And sometimes like that, is the recipe for something strong. The buoy thing is the thing that's throwing me off. Like, it kind of has like Wall-E energy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to be able to stick the landing on making me have an emotional attachment to this buoy. However, it could be, you know, sort of like an everything everywhere situation where I really do, by the end, get attached somehow to these inanimate objects. Yeah. But yeah, I think I would give this a maybe like 62%.
Oh, wow. Tomatoes. I gave it 30. I'm just...
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think like... first impressions are doing that well. But we'll see. We'll revisit this. Another good separate wide berth here. Mm-hmm. Also one we were talked about that I think we'll end up covering is One of Them Days, starring Kiki Palmer and SZA, which looks very funny, very fun. I thought it was directed by Issa Rae, but it's not. She's a producer and going out promoting it. And it just looks funny. It's like a getting to the party style comedy, but it's about roommates who are trying to get one of them to a job interview, I think. It looks very fun. And I'm hopeful that it will be like a girls trip style, nice surprise, like really elevated comedy. And I'm going to give it 85.
Yeah, I feel like if it was going to be that good, it would have been like moved to a different time that's not January. So I feel like it could end up being one of those movies that's sort of like, what was the point of that? But has really funny moments. So I'm going to give it a 70%. Okay. I am, however, very excited about this. I love Kiki Palmer. I think this looks like a lot of fun. Yeah, they're like trying to get the rent money and,
you know,
leads to various antics. So
of course.
Good. Excited. Yeah, glad we're doing it. Well, next week's episode will probably be on that.
Yeah. I assume. So we'll see right away who is correct, setting the tone for the rest of the year. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then February 14th, Paddington in Peru comes out, which I have a soft spot for the Paddington franchise. I think they're just both, I mean, so far there's been two films and they're both so delightful. The second one only got better. There's such a tenderness to it. And yet, like, it's really well-written, interesting, fun, beautifully, you know, put together around this little bear. And now they're taking him back to Peru, which I obviously have to root for because Rob's family is from Peru. So I'm excited about this one. And I think there's a general want for feel-good media. And so I think people will just eat this up like a marmalade sandwich. And I'm going to give it 90.
I'm going to give it like an 85. I sort of wonder if the fact that the second one is such a beloved movie might end up hurting this, where people are like, oh, it's not quite as good as the second one was. I actually have not seen any of these movies, so I really need to watch them all before this one comes out, because I know that I will really like them.
Yeah, so sweet.
But I just never got around to it for whatever reason. But yeah, I'm excited for this. We'll probably end up doing an episode on this as well. Although maybe actually not, because it comes out the same day as our next selection, which is a movie you have on your hate list.
Yeah.
Captain America, Brave New World, starring Red Hulk.
Ugh, yeah. I mean, listen, I think it's bad form that, you know, Marvel is giving the Captain America, you know, mantle over to a black man, and I'm shitting on it, and I wish it wasn't so, and I wish they did a better job of like making him an interesting character, but I just have not enjoyed Anthony Mackie. And you know what else? I'm very biased against him because I've come across one too many like dating, flirty, run-in horror stories about him being just an absolute douche and like a self-absorbed, egomaniacal little mean word. And I just don't like his energy. And I also think that this movie just looks like it's a curse. Like, I think they chose the weird characters. There's like a whole Zionist character that they've tried to rewrite supposedly. And I don't know. There's like Captain America of it all is like very, you know, it's who's literally a U.S. soldier, like, set up to save the world from itself. And it's like, babe, the call's coming from inside the house. Like, please, like, I can't go through this, like, propaganda again.
Who's the Zionist character?
There's like a new woman superhero who's historically, like, a very, like, very Zionist character.
Fascinating. Yeah, Marvel has been doing poorly as of late.
Yeah.
I think that this is going to struggle in a similar way that the Marvels did, just that you're not really working with anybody too beloved here.
Yeah.
I think the trailers didn't look that good or that interesting. It's another sort of like presidential, like bureaucraty kind of movie from the looks of it, which I think is one of the more boring type of plot lines that we get out of Marvel, where it's like the superheroes versus like the government trying to, you know, lock them up or something.
Well, I mean, those Captain America has been some of the most successful films exactly because of that angle. But I agree. Maybe we're not as open to that subject matter anymore.
Yeah, I feel like in the wake of Endgame, it's like we want something that's a little bit more big.
A little more punchy,
and this
a little
also
more fun.
Feels like a peace-moving movie to me from the trailer, where it's like, we're introducing some new people. We're setting up some stuff. Like it feels like a connection rather than a sort of standalone piece. And, you know, we're moving into this new phase. I think we're still in phase 5, but like we're headed towards these Avengers movies that are in phase 6. And so it's like, I just don't know. I don't have great feelings on this. I'm going to give it like a 64.
Yeah. I gave it a 70. Mm-hmm. So yeah. But in better news, February 28th, this strange little movie, The Legend of Ochi, is coming out, which I saw a trailer for like randomly and then was reminded of it in preparation for this. And it's like a very like fantasy epic that sort of like takes place in a futuristic society. Like they have cars, they have houses, but then they're also fighting off these mythical beasts called the Ochis. And it stars Willem Dafoe. Well, there's a girl who's the main character, but then Willem Dafoe is her dad. And this girl befriends a dangerous little creature and sets off to like return it to its home. So it's sort of like a How to Train Your Dragon meets E.T. style story set in this really lush, beautiful, like shot in Transylvania or something, like just gorgeous. It's produced by A24, and I think it just looks really tender, and we haven't had like a sort of Pan's Labyrinth style like weird fantasy sweeping saga in a while, so I'm gonna give it 80.
This is not my favorite genre of movie.
Yeah.
And it feels weird to me. Also, I am sort of suspect of this February date for this.
I know. Yeah.
Kind of bizarre movie.
But
as
that was
well.
Everything Everywhere All at Once, too.
So yeah, I guess so. I mean, maybe this will surprise me. And maybe it's me sort of taking things out on this, but I'm going to give it like a 54. I feel like this seems like it could be bad.
I thought you were a Willem Dafoe.
I mean, I
stan.
Love Willem Dafoe. I really do. But
the weirder, him, the better.
Well, yes, but like him having, you know, what was probably is going to amount to one scene in this movie does not necessarily make me think, oh yeah, wow, this is like going to be
sign me up. Okay,
not, you know, like he's in a lot of stuff.
That's fair. This was a risky one for me. I'll take the L if it comes to it. But I'm also holding out hope.
On a non-risky move, I selected a movie I've already seen, which is On Becoming a Guinea Fowl, which comes out March 7th. This is an A24 movie. It played the Fall Festival circuit this past year and then sort of got held over for next year. It is so good. I was planning on ranking this number 2 on my 2024 year-end list. Now it's gotten moved to 2025, so it will be... I mean... I don't want to speak out of turn, but I imagine that when it arrives on March 7th, it will be taking the top spot for my favorite movie of the year so far. And then we'll see if something can unseat it. But it's an African film about this woman who is driving along a road at night and in Africa and stumbles upon the dead body of her uncle. And then as her family is going through the funeral and sort of grieving process around this uncle, a lot of like family secrets and things come out. It really turns a lot of things on its head and has one of the best endings, I think, that really like ties together a bunch of stuff. And it's so well written, it's well acted. I feel like you're really gonna like it.
Ooh.
I'm gonna give this like a 93. I did not look at the current Letterboxd.
Is it like fun or is it like Moonlight? Like, is it depressing? Or is it in between?
It's like, it's very, I think, hard to describe. There's sections of it that are like really zany, kind of funny, kooky things. And then there's sections that are really kind of dark. And the way that it all ties together is really fascinating. A lot of interesting stuff.
Okay, what did you say? You said 70? 95?
No, you said 90. I said like 90 something.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember what I said. 94?
90 something.
92?
90 okay, something. Perfect. I said 85, but you're probably right, as you've seen it. My God.
Yeah. So, okay. And then the next thing on the schedule is the Bong Joon-ho movie, Mickey 17, which is coming out. And I really loved Parasite, as did you. Some of Bong Joon-ho's movies are a little bit weirder, you know, like Snowpiercer and stuff. I'm not sure that we're necessarily going to be getting another movie that's the same quality as Parasite. But this is about clones. Robert Pattinson is playing clones. It's like set in outer space. I love an outer space movie. I feel like I am very in the tank for this. I love Robert Pattinson. Yeah. I love the vibes. I think that this could end up being a sort of polarizing movie where the normies are like, what the F is going on? Like, this is too complicated and bad. A Tenet, if you will. But I'm going to go ahead and give it like an 82.
Ooh, I said 90. I was feeling confident for
okay.
it. I mean, just because Robert Pattinson looks really good in it, and also, I mean, just the legacy of the director. Like, I'm excited for it. It is kind of a weird release date, but I'm not going to hold that against it. I'm like, some people.
I do think that for sci-fi movies, for whatever, or I guess maybe I should open this up to genre movies, this like March time slot is really good, or I guess like early on, you know, this is when Dune came out last year. This is the Everything Everywhere All at Once slot. This is the Get Out slot, the Black Panther slot. Like, I think that because there's not a lot of competition here, if you have a movie that's a little bit weirder and you know is going to need some word of mouth, especially if it's like a genre thing that people aren't necessarily going to want to go see right away, this is a nice time slot for it. We're going to get to another movie, the new Ryan Coogler movie. Well, yes, the new Ryan Coogler movie, Sinners, which also I think has a sort of like has a vibe to it that's kind of similar, and that's in an April release. And I wonder if that, if both of these aren't sort of trying to capitalize on that same thing of like, okay, like let's take a sort of empty time slot and stick in a kind of weirder movie.
Yeah, they got to put something in there. And also in March, March 14th, Opus comes out, which I have to be honest, I put this as soon as I saw the released photo of Io Edebiri in it.
Oh, yeah.
I did not realize what it was. I assumed it was comedy. That's on me. Okay. Because it's actually a A24 horror film that's like around this sort of a pop star who disappeared, comes back, and starts running sort of a cult. And there's not much known on it. Like, there's no trailer. It was at Sundance. And supposedly it may have musical numbers. I don't know. Did you see this or hear of it during your?
It hasn't come out yet because like it's Sundance for this year, so it's yet. So that's like in a couple of weeks, I guess, like the end of the month. So yeah, I don't think anyone has seen this yet. The Wikipedia premise is: a young writer is invited to the remote compound of a legendary pop star who mysteriously disappeared 30 years ago. Surrounded by the star's cult of sycophants and intoxicated journalists, she finds herself in the middle of his twisted plan. I guess John Malkovich is playing the pop star, or maybe not. And then Juliette Lewis is in this as well.
Yeah, I mean, sign me up.
Yeah, so I do feel like this could be really good. This could also be, you know, sort of weird and bad. But I'm trusting in Io. I'm going to give this an 83.
Yeah, I said 75, but I mean, I love her. Supremacy all the way. So I'm hopeful. I have to pour one out for my next one, March 21st. It's the long-awaited, long-dreaded Snow White starring Rachel Zegler, who cannot catch a break. And I really feel badly for her because I think she is talented. And I wish she could find a vehicle that works for her, but this doesn't seem to be it. It looks terrible. I mean, it's been a curse from the get-go. It stars Gal Gadot. I mean, please, for the love of God. And there's the whole, like, dwarves being CGI, and it's just, it doesn't look great. It, in fact, looks like it stole a lot of the quote-unquote feminist elements from the Snowman and the Huntsman style thing. Like, there's a whole battle for the kingdom. Like, Snow White is something that we have tried to do over and over again, and I just think we should have stopped at honestly Snow White and the Seven Dwarves from 1930 or whatever it was. I don't think it's necessarily source material we need to explore further. I don't get the itch for it. Rachel Zegler can sing, and that's exciting for her, but I just don't want to see this, and I don't want it to do well, and I don't think it will. So I'm going to put it at 45.
Yeah, this feels like a movie that people are excited to not like, and yeah. I think that the reviews of this are going to rip it to shreds, even if it's just sort of like a middling movie. And yeah, if it's actually bad, it's like gonna Madame be Web. bad.
Yeah,
yes. But a sort of, I think even more so than Madame Web, because with Madame Web, like, it was goofy bad. But with Snow White, I think between the people who don't like Gal Gadot, the various sort of like political reasons why you wouldn't like this movie, I just feel like there's a lot of people who, and then on top of it, the Disney of it all, and sort of Disney's, yeah, you know, decline over the past 5 years, there's just, yeah, a lot of reasons to want to really.
You know what? Yeah, you're making me change my answer. I'm dropping it to 35.
Yeah, I'm like, I think it could be really low. I'm like, I think maybe like 33. Because you also just have, it's like, you have the dwarves thing, which, yeah, they had, which, Peter Dinklage like released a statement saying like, why are we doing movies about dwarves? So then they got rid of the dwarves from the title, but obviously they made them sort of more cartoonish in the movie, which is odd, but they're still there. Like, you can't do, yeah, this story without them. You have the kind of rapey element of, oh, she's asleep and the guy has to come and give her a kiss, which, like, I don't really know how exactly you can spin that without making it creepy. And then the movie itself, the original, I just don't think has that much like meat on the bones to it. You're having to add a bunch of things. Yeah, I don't know. I think that Rachel Zegler is good at singing, but she seems sort of annoying. I also can't see the press cycle of this really helping, yeah, her very much, which I think could also be an issue, especially if they have her doing interviews, you know, before the review embargoes and stuff are up, because she's probably going to be saying some weird things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, how do you get around Zionist Gal Gadot? Yeah, problematic, yeah, problematic, problematic.
Yeah. But I think the next one is the only time I'm like actually stoked to get to the theater early to watch a trailer. March 28th, Death of a Unicorn comes out. And this just sort of like came out of nowhere. Like, it was like the trailer was released during the Christmas season, I think. And it stars Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. And they accidentally roadkill a unicorn. And they're on their way to his boss's house, who's like a pharmaceutical, you know, giant. And the whole cast just seems like so much fun. You have, what's his name? I love him from Maze Runner. Will Poulter.
Oh, yes.
Gorgeous. Tay Leone. And then Richard E. Grant. And it looks like it goes crazy. Like, they start to try and, you know, use the unicorn for profit, and then it turns into this sort of like murderous rampage from the other unicorns. So absolutely bonkers premise. But I think it just looks so fun and different, and everyone's like giving their all. Like, it's giving the same ensemble energy of like the first Knives Out, where it's just a delight to see these up and comers and proven actors and getting to play like different sorts of extreme, like, parody style, uber wealthy, out of touch people. So I'm hopeful for it. I think it could have like the Ready or Not style of like a surprise body horror type of fun comedy. So I'm gonna give it 80%.
Yeah, I'm gonna go higher. I'm gonna give this 85. Oh, I think that this has a lot of promise. Sort of the antithesis of Rachel Zegler is Jenna Ortega, who I think has sort of stumbled upon like really nothing but great roles, even in sort of bad projects sometimes. You know, she had Scream, she had Wednesday. I did enjoy the new Beetlejuice movie when I finally got around to seeing that. I think the cast is really fun. Paul Rudd is really fun. Where Rachel Zegler's person keeps putting her in things that she should not be in. I think Jenna Ortega's agents are smarter in their choices. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I think this will be a fun, interesting, very like original movie. Yeah. And the fact that it got so many good people in the cast makes me hope that the script is really strong, because otherwise I kind of don't know why you would be in this movie. Yeah. It's not from anyone particularly like famous or well known. So,
and it has the added element of like anti big pharma, which yes, us as a country have been really feeling.
Yes, Louise
due to no real specific in the current events.
Get him in the you know, some sort of PR thing. He can hop it from jail.
Yeah.
A movie that I think we all really need right now is the next thing on this list, which is Passion of the Christ Resurrection. The sequel, but sort of prequel about Jesus in the years before his death. The sequel to Passion of the Christ, which Mel Gibson is directing it. You know, like what could possibly go wrong here? Also, it stars the same person who played Jesus in the original one, Caviezel, which I'm kind of like, how is that working out? Because now he's like 20 years older than he was when he played Jesus. That like, yeah, it's very bizarre. I don't know what is happening. I'm sure the Christians will see it. My parents will go see this. It will do decently well at the box office. I think it has to be absolutely heinous as a movie. Yeah. And like Snow White, I think liberal critics are going to be going out of their way to torch this. So
we'll be 4 months into a neo-Christian government. So maybe it'll be nothing but positive reviews as allowed on Meta.
100% on Rotten Tomatoes is our score. And actually, both you and I want to go on the record right now and say that we are excited for this. We really love this movie.
Depending on how things go, I'm wearing my Mark Zuckerberg
t-shirt and go and watch this with all of my heterosexual love interests.
Was a big, like, Mormons were against Passion of the Christ when it first came out.
Because it was Catholic?
Because our whole thing is like, we shouldn't dwell on the crucifixion. Like, you know, like, we're not a church that has a lot of crucifixes up or anything. Like, it's, so I'm curious if the Mormon culture is like, ooh, resurrection. Like, if they're on board now, like, cause it's the story they like to focus on, you know, the second coming of it, the first coming of it all, the resurrection of it all.
Fascinating.
So I'll have to see how the Deseret News covers this. Because I remember very clearly the uproar over the dramatization of Passion of the Christ. So
fascinating. Okay, well, if we have Passion of the Christ, then we're moving directly into Sinners, which is the aforementioned Ryan Coogler movie starring Michael B. Jordan as twins, I think. Ooh. And they're going against each other. I've seen the trailer for this, but it's sort of one of those sort of vague trailers where I'm still unclear exactly what's going on. It feels like there's twists. There's going to be random mystery and mayhem. Ryan Coogler, I think, really has only made great movies. Michael B. Jordan is an excellent actor.
Didn't he do, am I mistaken in that he did Mufasa?
No, that was Barry Jenkins.
Oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. I'm sorry. That's my bad, honestly.
Yikes.
It's not that I confused them. It's that I literally thought Ryan Coogler did Mufasa.
You know, it does feel like something that Ryan Coogler would do because he did do Creed and Black Panther, yeah, which are...
I literally thought Black Panther decided to direct the Mufasa. This changes much.
Which is why Mufasa is even crazier and probably why I gave it a high score last time. God. Because Barry Jenkins has, prior to Mufasa, did Moonlight, Beale Street Could Talk, and the Underground Railroad TV show, which it's like those properties are so far flung from Mufasa. Wow. It's shocking. Whereas Ryan Coogler did Fruitvale Station, Creed, excellent, Black Panther, and Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which, you know,
this makes a lot more sense for Mufasa. I mean, in how I process. Okay, yeah. Thank you for clarifying.
Yes, happy to. I'm excited for Sinners. I think it'll be good.
What did you give it?
Oh, I'm going to give it a 90.
Oh my gosh. I was settling at like 70. 73, let's say.
The other thing that I think might be good about this one is that it was originally supposed to have the date that Mickey 17 has in March, and then they swapped it and put it in April, which I think is the better slot. Mm. So I'm thinking that that means that the studio thinks that this will be better than Mickey 17, or like more, maybe more populist will do better.
Another horror. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do love Ryan Coogler's movies. I still feel ashamed and embarrassed and sorry that I ever confused his work
with Mufasa.
But that is exciting to me. Yeah. No offense to Barry Jenkins, who also has beautiful films.
Yeah, but very different energies of movies. Yeah, Barry Jenkins are much more like chill, calm, slow things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have another I think.
Oh, yes, I do, which is the Lilo and Stitch movie. You know, just basically everything Disney is bad. They're doing a live action Lilo and Stitch. I don't know why we need this. On one hand, I do think that this will be better than some of the other live action movies that Disney has done, just because it is set in the real world with real people. Yes, there's these aliens that will be, you know, computer generated, but otherwise this seems like a more straightforward movie that will look more normal in live action than the last crop that we've seen, which have, you know, it's like, oh, we're under the sea, we're in Africa, we're whatever, where it's like we're doing a lot of non sets. This feels like, okay, we can just go to the beach and then put,
I mean, and Lilo is a cute CGI actress, and Stitch looks pretty cute for an animated character. Like, it's giving Sonic the Hedgehog redo energy. So I was surprised to see you hate on this, but...
I mean, I'm not looking forward to it. I think it will get 79.
Okay, yeah. I was saying 75.
Yeah. Perfect. I'm more excited about, though, on my streak of
course
things, is the new John Wick movie, John Wick Ballerina. I think that John Wick 3 is absolutely phenomenal. I think John Wick 4, they lost the plot a little bit and it was too long and they were getting a little high on their own supply. This is a spin-off that is focused on a ballerina assassin played by Ana de Armas. Mm-hmm. I think that Ana de Armas is an incredible actress. Like, I hated Blonde, but she's so funny in her scenes in the James Bond movie. She's in this movie Eden, which isn't out, that was at the festivals this year, that she's really great in. I think that she will be very fun in this movie. I think, unlike Keanu Reeves, who is, no offense, not necessarily a great actor, I think that this opens up the lead character to have sort of more emotions than Keanu does. And I also think, like, this franchise knows how to do set pieces. They have a lot of money. I think that this will be a romp. I think I am going to really enjoy it. Will critics love it? I don't know. I'm going to give it like a 74, but I think I will like it.
Matt, last year you gave this a 95.
Did I?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, I'm going to stick with mine and say 94 because I think
I think it will be good.
No, I know. But I think the John Wick franchise works because the people who are reviewing John Wick love John Wick, you know? So it's like a proven, like they know what they're getting. True. They like what they like. And so it'll just be positive across the board is my theory. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So June 20th, 28 years later, comes out. And I know last time we talked about this on a pop culture roundup or something, I found out that it was going to be like there's already another sequel filmed and that they were both filmed on iPhones, which I felt was gimmicky and I was a little bit like unsure. After reading more about it, it turns out they're pretty adapted iPhones, right? Like they have a lot going for them.
Yeah, they got a lot of
a lot more than just your classic filter lens and ring light and all of that. But I think it was also like a cute nod to their first film, which was another like very plucky, low budget thing where they couldn't afford, nor did they have the time to like carry around good cameras, like clunky film cameras. And instead, when it came out again, almost three decades ago, it was on cheap like digital camcorders, like basically handheld camcorders that they were doing because they had to do these like insane empty London shots, like really fast type thing. So I still think this looks great. It's honestly one of the best trailers I've seen in recent years. And it has such a beloved, it's such a beloved franchise at this point and sort of one of the only longstanding zombie franchises to continually deliver. The director seems to know, the writer and director seems to know what he's doing. And also, I know you're against him, but Alex Garland helps write these two, and I think he's a good writer in this sort of genre. So I'm excited for this one. I think I'm going to give it 85.
I don't like Alex Garland. He's actively annoying. I have not liked any of his movies with the exception of
Never Let Me Go. Well, he didn't do this one, I don't think. Or maybe he helped.
Well, he wrote it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the screen. Yes, this and 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple, which is the other movie that's coming.
Yeah.
He wrote both of them, at least according to Wikipedia.
No, that's right.
He's credited as the writer. Danny Boyle is the director.
You're right, the director.
Yeah. I find him annoying. I find him very arrogant. I think that he thinks he's extremely smart. I also don't love Aaron Taylor Johnson as an actor. I sort of find him kind of annoying. And he's the lead in this, I guess, or him and Jodie Comer. I don't know. I don't think that I am going to love this movie. I think there's going to be things in it that annoy the crap out of me. However, do I think other people will like it more than me? Yes. I'm going to give it a 74.
Okay. And you've never seen the franchise.
And I've never seen the first two.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
So another franchise I need to watch to catch up on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and now your baby's being franchised, so.
Well, yes, my baby, Megan, iconic dancer. I also noticed that on our document, you spelled it with an E and not the three, which feels like
lazy.
An insult to our girl. I am so excited for Megan 2.0. Did we talk about this last year? I feel like this is
Megan?
Gotten bumped.
Oh, yeah. No, the 2.0? No, I don't think we did.
No, okay. I think that this movie is really primed to be phenomenal.
That's crazy.
The first one did not have a very big budget, mm-hmm. and it wasn't very gory, and it really, between the marketing and them releasing the titanium single, I think it just, whoever was in charge of this really knew what was funny and what was camp about it and leaned into it in an appropriate way. And I think that now that it has more money, it can do even sort of bigger and weirder funny things. So I'm really hoping that this sort of busts the doors off of it and goes ham in a way that's fun and entertaining. I think the problem with horror genres and horror sequels in general is that the first movie is really strong, sort of almost accidentally. And then the second one gets worse because they're, you know, it's like you're in the weeds or the cast is different, whatever. I think that this sort of has the opposite thing going for it, where the first one had pieces that were good, but you wanted more of it. Mm-hmm. Like I wanted more weird dancing. I wanted more of her singing. I wanted more of her killing people. Like, I left that movie and I thought, oh, there were these scenes that were so good, but I like really wanted more of it. And I hope that this sequel gives us what the audience is craving. And I can't wait to see like the dolls showing up in random places and on the red carpet. And I don't know. I'm very excited for this. I think it has potential to be a lot of fun. Again, do I think that snooty critics will understand that fully? I don't know. So I think I'm going to give it like a 72, but I'm excited.
Doesn't Megan have like 90%? Like the first one?
I don't know. See, this is the thing. I never check what these...
Yeah, Megan has 93%. It's certified fresh.
Well, then maybe it should go higher.
Yeah.
Can I change it?
Yeah, I'm like, change
okay, it. Let's give it an 85.
Okay. I think that I honestly respect your take on it getting more bloody, but I do feel like it will struggle with the weight of its own legacy in the sense that it was such a surprise hit that they probably are overthinking it now. And it'll be like either regurgitating the same sort of shtick, or it'll just be disappointing because we all hyped it up so much, you know? Like, I think, I don't know. I'm less optimistic for it. So I'm settling in at 45.
I'm thinking about this in a Mamma Mia kind of situation where it's like Mamma Mia, okay. Here we go again, was like, we know what you liked in the original. We're going to do all of those kinds of things in just like a more... in a bigger kind of kookier way. We're not going to try to like change anything. We're not going to try to like outdo ourselves. Like, we're just going to give you what you wanted and we're going to give you more of it. Where, you know, I think it's hard, especially for like, I'm trying to think of like, what's a, you know, like Legally Blonde or something where it's right. Like,
doesn't have a story to
like,
move.
Yeah, it's like the story and all of these pieces are really what makes it work. Where Megan, it's like, was the story that good? No. Was the character development that good? No. The things that people loved about it are things that you can easily replicate in a bigger, funner way.
Okay, you know what? You've convinced me. I'll bump it up too. I'll give it 55. But
okay, perfect.
Okay, so June 27th, F1 movie comes out, and that's the title, and I already hate it, and I'll tell you why. One, it's funded by F1. It's Formula One. It's also funded by freaking Brad Pitt, who stars in it, and let me tell you, that man's ego, I am sure he made this movie just so he could drive a Formula One car, and it's supposedly ballooned out of budget. They, like, made a bunch of Formula One people mad because they filmed during some of the races, like, obviously not during the actual races, but on the weekends of these elaborate F1 races, they would like do some stunts and stuff. It stars a bunch of the F1, not stars, it features a bunch of the F1 drivers as themselves. And it just feels like such a like ego masculine bro endeavor. And it's like, if your movie is called F1 movie, I'm just going to assume the story is not there. It is directed by the person who did Top Gun Maverick, I believe. So I do have to respect that I could eat my words heavily because that turned out to be a very fun movie. But I do not think this has the legacy nor emotional hinge that Top Gun brought to its sequel. So I'm going to settle this in at 35.
I think that that is a wise move. Like, I think that a lot of this is going to hinge on the writing. And the writer also wrote Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Transformers Age of Extinction, the Dumbo movie from a couple of years ago, which I liked, but nobody else did. The Ring sequels, the Brothers Grimm movie.
Yeah, not great.
Like, there's just a lot here that is not super strong to me. And I am worried that if the script isn't there, we're just going to be watching a lot of like car chase scenes. Like, I think
they're called the races, version, but yeah.
Whatever. Like, I think the best version of this is like a Ford versus Ferrari kind of situation.
Yeah, you're not getting that. I don't
know if that's what this is. I'm going to give it a 62.
Oh, wow. Okay. A confident. Jurassic World Rebirth comes out July 2nd. And honestly,
100%. 100%. Jonathan Bailey in glasses. What else could we need?
Lettman wears slutty like, little glasses. Like,
it's like, oh my gosh. I've never been, like, I've been in love with Jonathan Bailey for like 5 years now. And I've never been more in love with Jonathan Bailey than seeing him in these glasses.
Honestly, like, iconic that that's all they released. Like, it was like, oh, we're doing a movie. You think it's going to be bad? Ding. And they just send a picture of Jonathan Bailey in glasses, like, bent over in a bush. Like, it's like, yes. Like, I honestly don't need to know more. And it just, like, highlights how poorly cast it was with, like, the Chris Pratt hype of it all. Like, Chris Pratt does not have the riz nor chemistry that Jonathan Bailey has with every single walking person on this planet. And I just think that will carry it enough, even if this movie continues to be a terrible franchise that's just like crawling its way to the grave. So I'm optimistic that there will be parts of it I enjoy, and so I'm gonna give it a 62.
Okay, let me, I guess the only thing that I'm thinking about is who is the writer on this movie? And because this is really, I feel like, where I need to be looking at this. Okay, he is the writer of Jurassic Park with Michael Crichton. Okay, that he also wrote Death Becomes Her, which is very good. Lost World, he wrote the Spider-Man movie in 2002. Okay, this, I mean, yes, he did also work on Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, so that's not a great vibe for him. Oh, also, randomly, he is also the writer of Presence, which is the new Steven Soderbergh movie that I don't want to call it a horror movie, a ghost movie kind of, that's coming out in a couple of weeks that's very, very, very good. I am, also the director is Gareth Edwards, who I think is good at doing sci-fi stuff. He did, what was that movie with John David Washington that we watched, that random sci-fi one? Do you remember that?
Tenet.
where he's like trying to find the girl. Like, there's like a girl and they're in the future and there's robots. You didn't really like it.
What?
People were like, oh.
Oh, like The Creator.
The Creator, yes. But gorgeous. A gorgeous movie. Trying to find this girl.
I don't know if that's
okay. Yeah, I'm going to give it 100. You know, 100%. Jonathan Bailey, 100%. Sorry.
I look forward to that perfect
story.
Sorry,
not sorry.
Seen by Jonathan such Bailey. Few films, but destined for Jurassic World Rebirth.
You know what? You're telling me that people are going to watch Jonathan Bailey in those glasses and not
immediately say perfect film.
Yeah, and so and be so sidetracked. I'm now looking at Jonathan Bailey's IMDb or like his Wikipedia page. He's in a rendition of Richard II on stage in London sometime this year. I'm like, when is that?
You gotta get there.
Can we get tickets?
Oh my God. If you get press tickets, I'll go.
I mean, I think we could just buy tickets. Like, tickets in London are not expensive.
I know, but I need an excuse for certain people.
Air quality. Air quality is bad. Air quality is bad in LA. You got to get out. Okay, it's going from February 10th to May 10th.
Oh, okay. I probably won't be able to make it. Sorry.
Yeah, that's
too soon.
A tricky time.
It's also like one of my least favorite plays, so...
Yeah, it's Richard II is my favorite. Richard III is obviously the better one. I'm sort of in. You can tell that he just loves doing theater because, like, most of his IMDb is theater. Oh my gosh, I love him.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Such a delight.
Why won't he marry me? Truly the greatest loss of my life. Yeah. Okay. What is next up on our list? Oh, the Superman reboot that we're getting from. What's his face? James Gunn. I think this looks bad. I'm sorry. I have never seen a version of Superman that I thought was well done or interesting. I think he's a boring character. I think it's a boring concept. I don't like it. I think that from the trailers and the clips and stuff we've seen so far, this again looks super dull. It's been like rehashed 9 million times. I also don't think that either David Corenswet or Mrs. Maisel are that interesting of actors. And while they look like the version of Lois Lane and Superman that we've come to expect, I don't find them to be people who I think, oh, they're really gonna, you know, bring something interesting to this. Nicholas Holt as Lex Luthor, which also kind of feels like, okay, I think I've seen that before. There's just nothing here that I'm interested in. Yeah. And I'm kind of like bad. And yeah, it feels soulless. And I sort of hope that it crashes and burns. I think that it's possible that the you know, nerd bros love it, and yeah, that it has, you know, some sort of vibe to it. Also, James Gunn is a good director, yeah, but it's weird because I feel like James Gunn is good at doing sort of kooky things, and nothing about this seems kooky to me. So it feels like it could be an ill-matched project.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with 68.
Yeah, I think it'll end up being one of those like, oh, it's like art. And I think it'll get, I'm going to be in an 87.
Okay. Okay.
Next up in the superhero world is July 25th. Fantastic Four comes out, which is another Marvel movie. This one's starring Pedro Pascal and Joseph Quinn and Vanessa Kirby. And it's not that I'm necessarily like, I don't care about the story. And in fact, like the first Fantastic Four, whatever, take it or leave it. But I do think that this getting the summer banner for Marvel speaks well for it. Thunderbolts is one we didn't talk about, but comes out earlier in the year. So it's like a very heavy Marvel year. And so putting this one in the center seems like a good omen. And obviously Pedro Pascal and Joseph Quinn are already a proven duo from their Gladiator 2 promo scenes. And I don't know. I think it's a weird enough, like the teaser they gave us was weird enough that I'm kind of hopeful that they'll do something a little different and more fun and like off the beaten path. So I don't know. I'm going to give it 80%.
I think that this movie is aided by the fact that it's new characters. So it won't be as tied down, especially as Captain America, Brave New World and
yeah,
Thunderbolts are, with the sort of lore and the place setting. Both of those movies feel like weird sort of interstitial kind of things where they're setting up these groups of characters, where Fantastic Four feels newer.
Yeah.
I also agree that like that summer blockbuster spot is really prime. I think there's a lot of reason to think that this is going to be good. And also they're already sort of banking on the Fantastic Four being great because they've made the Fantastic Four villain the villain of the sort of, you know, big Avengers movies that are coming in a couple of years. So, yeah, I agree. I think this is like 86-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'm sorry to all my millennials out there, but August 8th, Freakier Friday. I just, this like nostalgia-fueled, cash-grabby sort of like, let's regurgitate these stories. It's like, okay, I get it. But on something like Freaky Friday, where we already have so many body swap comedies and none of them do that well, I'm just sort of like, what can they do here that'll be worth it? I just like don't have a lot of optimism for it. And you also have the element of like making these characters moms. Like, I'm pretty sure Lindsay Lohan's character will be a mom. So then it's like, okay, is there going to be a generational swap? Which is, again, I'm pretty sure a movie they did with on Netflix like a year ago. So I just feel like this is just going to feel kind of soulless and a little bit lame and a letdown. And like, I don't know. So while and also Jamie Lee Curtis shouldn't be anywhere near a mic these days. So I'm not sure if this will play out the way they want it to. I'm going to give it 58 and call it generous.
I love Jamie Lee Curtis. I'm like, I find her so entertaining and all of her like just rambling on about things. She's such an odd figure. And I feel like that the the Oscar win for her really just like cemented her in her own mind as like somebody who, you know, needs to be talking about things in a way that I don't necessarily know if she does. Okay, so I guess here's the thing that I'll say about Freaky or Friday. I really did like Hocus Pocus 2. I think that there are versions of these like reboots can be a lot of fun, even if they're sort of not necessarily like as good as the original. Mm-hmm. And yes, I think this is going to get so much flack from people who are like, we didn't need to see this, or, you know, this wasn't that great, blah, 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 blah. I think that there's also the potential that this just is a lot of fun as a movie. I also do think that there is some interesting stuff in a body swap comedy about a sort of like aging, like how old would Lindsay Lohan be, like late 30s, early 40s kind of person, and then someone who is older, just in like a commentary sort of about aging and like our bodies and what that looks like. I don't know if the movie is going to go in that direction with this at all, but I think that there is some poignancy that could be mined from this that isn't, you know, that they couldn't necessarily do from the original when you're a high school student and a, you know, mom. So I don't know. I think I really like Jamie Lee Curtis. I really like Lindsay Lohan. I really want this to do well. Like, I'm rooting for the Lindsay Lohan comeback. Also, I really want her to host SNL around this so that then she'll be in the Five Timers Club, which I think is such a funny thing. So I don't know. Like, I really am willing this to do well. I'm going to give it an 82. Oh, I want it.
Love it for you.
I want it to be great.
Yeah.
And we have to, you know, sort of ask for the things that we want. Yeah. Okay. Speaking of, next up, Downton Abbey 3. I don't know really what there is to say about this. I love Downton Abbey. I'm excited for this movie. Will non-Downton Abbey fans like it? Go see it. No, who cares? Will Downton Abbey fans be obsessed with it? Yes, 100%. They have not missed once on an episode, on a movie. Like, I know exactly what I'm going to get. I know I'm going to love every second of this. I did not look and see what the other movies got for as far as Rotten Tomatoes scores, but I feel like they did well. I'm going to give it an 87.
Cute. I gave it an 80. I mean, you are missing Dame Maggie Rogers, right? So
not Maggie Rogers, Maggie
Smith. Oh my gosh. This is why
you're mixing up all of these people today. It's like, wow, that smoke cancer is setting in early, Shelby. The brain is already going.
Okay, I was going to talk about Predator, but I changed my mind. So you can go to your next favorite.
Okay. Next up is a movie that Shelby will 100% either not see or hate, which is Begonia, the new movie or the next movie from Yorgos Lanthimos. This is the movie that supposedly Emma Stone had to shave her head for. We really know nothing about it. I love Yorgos Lanthimos. I like all of his movies that I've seen. I think Emma Stone is great. They are a fun partnership. I think that she will be giving a very interesting performance. It will be an interesting movie. I'm hyped for it. It's also got a prime November 7th release date, which feels very Oscar-y. I'm going to give this a 90.
Yeah, I'm giving it an 80. I mean, it's probably good. I put together this list for Matt to choose from, and this is the only one that he added that I did not know existed. So,
yes. Well, I only knew that it existed because I was writing my 2025 preview and found it and was like, oh, well, I'm definitely including this. So, yeah.
Well, controversial next pick for you.
So, yes, controversial. Wicked 2, Wicked for Good. I chose this as a movie that I wouldn't like. I think mostly because I wanted one of us to talk about it, and I am sort of skeptical of this.
No, I would have put it on my hate list, on my worried list, if you hadn't. So I think we're on the same page.
It's like, I loved the first Wicked.
Yeah.
I think that the first Wicked, like, while, yes, it was a feat, I think it was a not that difficult to execute feat because the first half of the musical is so strong. You have all the good songs. Like, as long as you cast it well and have a lot of money for, you know, the set and the score and the whatever, like, it's going to work. I think that the second one has a lot more heavy lifting. Yeah. There's new music coming in. There's new parts added to the script. It's the worst songs in a lot of ways. There's just, I feel like, a lot of places that can go wrong. It's a lot darker tone.
It's pretty convoluted.
And I feel like people are going to go into it thinking, oh, it's going to be fun, like the first Wicked, and then sort of be surprised when it's not. I do think that there's a world in which this is pulled off well, and then it wins tons of Oscars and stuff because it's like a little bit more hefty and people like it. And I also sort of wonder if they won't be doing some corrections to that lighting from the first one in post-production. So yeah, I think there is a world in which it really works. I think there's also a world in which it really doesn't.
You introduce, like, first of all, you lose Jonathan Bailey. He turns into a fucking scarecrow. Like, who wants to look at that when you could look at Fiero, you know? Like, it's like, I'm sorry to all scarecrows out there. But then you also introduce the whole Dorothy plot. You have, like, way more time with the wizard being nefarious. And it's just sort of like, yeah, it just gets dark. The politics get muddied. Like, I don't know. I think you get all the essence having the frame story in Wicked, that it's almost like Wicked 2 will just feel like a slog to get to that. And with No One Mourns the Wicked being such a colorful, like, bright, like, good, powerful, like, anthem, you're sort of like, okay, so now we have to get through all the depressing, but just to end up where we started. And it's like, yeah, I'm worried about it. I am. I think that they've proven themselves to be, like, really aware of the political sort of story at play. And so, like, yeah, I'm sure they'll do a good job of like elevating that in a way that the stage can't. But it's sort of like, to what end, you know? And I don't know. I'm not looking forward to it, if I'm honest. I'd rather just watch Wicked 1 again.
Yeah. So that, I feel like that is maybe the biggest question mark of the year for me. Yeah. It's like, will they be able to pull off Wicked? I'm gonna give it a 70. I think that it won't be as good. And then I think the reviews will be like, Wicked 2, not as good as Wicked 1.
Yeah.
A movie I'm sure we can both hate is our next movie on the list, which you selected, Five Nights at Freddy's 2. I hated that first one so much.
Oh my gosh. I think I changed this too, actually. Wait, did I miss it? 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh yeah, because I decided to hate on Warfare, which is a TB released Alex Garland film. But Five Nights at Freddy's will suck.
I'm sure I'll hate that as well. Yeah. Yes, Five Nights at Freddy's bad will be terrible. The first one, hated so much.
Yeah.
But we can also talk about Warfare, which is TBD release date, but if we must discuss.
No, yeah. Warfare, okay. I'm a Civil War. Like, I loved the movie Civil War. I still think about it. It will end up in my top 10. I'm sorry. Just giving you the expectation there, Matt. But I was disappointed to see that Alex Garland's, like, directorial film for 2025 is this movie that's written by a soldier based on his real experience in Afghanistan. And it's one of those in real time sort of just like war propaganda. Like, I'm sorry, guys, if you're putting hot men in suits and giving nameless bad guys for them to shoot up as you're, like, rooting for these people that you're emotionally connected to, that's propaganda. Like, $10 says that the army will play a commercial ahead of this film, like they did with Battle LA, like they do with all these sort of, like, American Sniper type things. And I just can't stand it. Like, I'm sorry. I respect that this is this man's experience. I don't know him. I don't know what it was like or what political, you know, awakening he had or may have had. And I hope maybe that this can still take an anti-war approach, but I just don't think this is worth the investment in telling a story when we've already smothered out so many opportunities for storytellers to literally live and come out of Afghanistan because of what we did in that war. So I don't want to like this. I know I won't like it, but I'm sure America will just gobble it up, and I'm giving it a 70%.
I sort of don't know. I'm trying to think, like, what was the last war movie that came out that wasn't like a fun action movie, but was like pro-military?
You know what I mean? Like, obviously, like, you have historical films if you want to go to like Dunkirk in 1917, or you're talking like modern warfare.
Like, yeah, I'm talking modern warfare because it's like, I think it's very easy to talk about World War II.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and have that be like a, okay, we had to do this because of the Nazis and the Holocaust. Yeah. But even something like 1917 or the All Quiet on the Western Front, which were World War I movies, I think really depicted the war as like sort of unnecessary and terrible.
Yeah.
So I think it would be kind of odd if this movie sort of comes at this from a, oh, isn't this great, or aren't these people brave or something. Like, I sort of wonder if there's not a more negative quality that's like lurking in the message somewhere. Yeah. Especially because Civil War, you know, really wasn't so like a pro war movie. Yeah. So I'm wondering if we're just sort of reading what this is incorrectly. Yeah. We don't have that much information about it.
Yeah.
But I, again, don't like Alex Garland. So I will, the fact that he's doing two movies this year is annoying to me. I'll give this, a 65. Like, sure.
Yeah. But then we're back to December 19th, which is a movie you're not looking forward to.
Yeah, Avatar 3, Avatar Fire and Ash. Like, yeah. I'm sure that this will do well. I'm sure that it will make lots of money. Like, the first two movies, like, were they good? Unclear. But, like, they just, like, raked in money hand over fist. Like, I don't think they're necessarily bad movies. I don't think that they deserve to be the two, like, highest grossing movies that ever were made. Yeah. I think that the third one, you know, it's introducing these fire people. It's going to be gorgeous, of course. Like very pro-environmentalist of whatever, for whatever reason. So I think it will do, like, I think like 90% for Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I think that this is going to do well, but I am sort of not looking forward to it. And I do feel like at some point the Avatar, like, has to kind of fall off a little bit. Like, I think, like, it gets less popular. I don't know if that's this movie or that's the next movie that.
Well, it's like Avatar 1 and Avatar 2 had like, what, a decade in between them?
Yes.
Whereas this is like so soon after that it's sort of going to regurgitate the same plot, which the first one did. I mean, which the second one did with the first. And it's just, I think the goodwill will be lost, especially as other films catch up to the CGI of it all. Like, yes, James Cameron, very talented at like making a swimming pool look like an ocean and like making us care about a whale who can't, you know, but it's just like at a certain point I feel like, okay, I don't know. So I'm gonna give it like 75.
Okay, interesting.
So my last love it or prediction to enjoy it is December 25th, Christmas Day, Anaconda comes out, which at first I was like, okay, whatever, we don't need a reboot, but this is a intentional like comedy spoof of the J-Lo Anaconda, and it stars Paul Rudd and Jack Black, and it's directed by the guy who did The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. And I just think that that might be the perfect recipe for the kind of movie I like the kind of monster flick that I like, where it's over the top, it's campy, it has a lot of fun characters, and it's just like, it knows exactly what it is, like Pacific Rim was for me. So I think it being on a Christmas day, this like banner placement is good news too. And so I'm going to, I don't think it'll be everyone's cup of tea, but I'm going to give it 68.
Yeah, I guess it's hard for me to tell exactly what this is because I think they've only announced that it's Jack Black and Paul Rudd. Like, if this is like a comedy, and let's say, you know, we get like Jennifer Coolidge, like some of these other type of people who are on this expedition, because the original Anaconda is like a classic horror film where there's a bunch of people and they sort of like get killed off one at a time.
Everyone's so getting eaten by the snake, but it's played kind of serious.
Scream, but with Anaconda, like,
yes,
I think that could be a lot of fun, and I do really like Jack Black. Like, I think he's a good time.
Yeah,
so I could see this working. The Christmas Day thing is sort of odd too, because there's already a bunch of stuff that's going to be coming out then. But yeah, I'll give this a 70.
Cute. I look forward to covering it.
Yeah. Okay, now we get to three movies I have on the list that are not dated yet, but are supposedly coming out this year. The first one is Mother Mary, which is perhaps my most anticipated film of the year.
Ooh.
This is the Anne Hathaway lesbian pop star movie that's coming out. Have we not talked about this yet? Oh my gosh. Well, let me inform you, Shelby. So it's from David Lowry, who has done, he did The Green Knight. He does more sort of
like art,
kind of weird, like arty, ethereal kind of stuff. Yeah. He did a ghost story. Mm. Yeah. So anyways, but the plot is it follows a lesbian relationship between a musician, a pop star played by Anne Hathaway, and a fashion designer played by Michaela Cole from This May Destroy You?
Oh, okay,
Destroy You? Whatever that was. Yeah. It also stars Hunter Schafer, Kaya Gerber, Sean Clifford, a.k.a. the sister from Fleabag. There's going to be musical elements in it. The music has been made by Jack Antonoff and Charlie XCX the Anne Hathaway pop star is going to be wearing. Like, I just feel like this is going to be a vibe. And could it end up being like a Vox Lux kind of disaster? Yes. But I really want this to be great in an interesting way that I feel like we haven't seen Anne Hathaway work in. We haven't really gotten one of these kind of movies in a bit.
Why hasn't it been like dated?
So it's A24. Mm. I assume what is happening is that they're going to send it to festivals and then it's going to come out later. I could almost see this movie going to Cannes.
Oh my gosh, look at you.
As
you're
well.
Blinded by your Anne Hathaway love. I don't know if I can trust you.
Well, I just like it's A24 and they don't have a date for it yet.
Yeah.
So that means that it's definitely not coming out in the spring.
Right.
And then I think if you have Anne Hathaway and Michaela Cole in these big performances, you're probably thinking awards. Mm. And so, so it's like, I think that it's probably most likely being saved for a like fall release at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll go to like Venice and TIFF and whatnot, and then sort of come out sometime after that, which is why we don't have a release date yet. Because A24 likes to do that.
Yeah.
Really a lot of the awards wings where they sort of like save it and then wait and see how stuff goes. And then they slot it into different slots depending on that. But
so what are you giving it?
I'm going to give it an 87.
Okay.
I'm rooting for this.
Yeah, I don't know. It does sound compelling, but then it's also like kind of weird. But I'll give it a 73.
Yeah, it's like, I think it really depends on the music too. I could see it sort of being like a Challengers kind of situation. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Where it's, or like a Saltburn, where it's like the zeitgeisty, fun movie. And I think that with both Saltburn and Challengers, they sort of screwed up when those came out as far as like awards kind of stuff goes. But if they nail this, then that could really work for them. The next movie that I have on my excited about list is Eddington, which is Ari Aster's next movie.
Oh.
It's a Western comedy. I feel like this will, again, be a movie that you don't like, but it stars Joaquin Phoenix, Pedro Pascal, Emma Stone, Austin Butler. I'm like, a lot of weird energy going on here.
Yeah.
I feel like this could be more of a Beau Is Afraid than a Hereditary in that it's like maybe not everyone's cup of tea, but I love Ari Aster. So I wanted to talk about it. I think this could end up with like a 65.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I liked some of Ari Aster.
I mean, the plot follows a small town New Mexico sheriff with higher aspirations. It's like, what does that mean? Like, that could be anything. So.
Okay. Sorry. What did you say?
You can't ask me to remember numbers.
Oh my gosh. I thought you wrote these down like a professional.
Oh no, I did not write these down. I'm coming up with them as I'm
80
talking.
80 something?
I think I said no, like 65.
Okay, 65. Okay, that
I
feels
think this
fair
will be
me.
Polarizing.
Okay, I'm going to go with 60.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the last movie on the list is the new Knives Out movie, which again also hasn't been dated yet. It's called Wake Up Dead Man, a Knives Out Mystery.
Okay.
And the cast includes Daniel Craig, Josh O'Connor, Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Kerry Washington, Andrew Scott, Kaylee Spaney, Daryl McCormick, and Thomas Hayden Church.
Okay.
So a good lineup. I feel like both of the first two Knives Out movies were good.
Yeah.
I think that this will be interesting. I've only seen pictures of Josh O'Connor in his little priest outfit. So
this feels
British to me. Mm. And it feels sort of like religious leaning, which I think could be interesting for this. I think like this is going to be a big deal when it comes out.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for it. Ryan Johnson is a very good writer. I think this will be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say like 92.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, okay, yeah, I was gonna say 90. I think that's solid. I didn't know that was coming out. I'm excited. What a good note to end on.
I know.
Look at that. Competing with Anaconda December 25th, probably. So
yeah, I could also see it sort of competing with Wicked, because didn't the last one come out like at a Thanksgiving time slot?
Yeah. I think they have been Thanksgiving movies.
Interesting. Yeah.
Very curious. So is it a Netflix movie? Like, is it? I'm guessing so.
It is a Netflix movie, but if you remember, the last one was released in theaters for a bit and then went to Netflix. So I wonder if they'll do that again or do like more of, like have it be in theaters for longer. Like, I'm very interested to see what they do with this.
Very curious. Well, that's exciting. What a year.
Yeah, I feel like that there is good stuff. I will say that looking at this lineup, like, yes, there are a few things that I'm like, ugh, this is nightmarish. But even a lot of the sequels, I think, sort of look fun. And I feel like there's less sort of soulless content on here than there has been the last couple of years. Mm. I feel like sequel fatigue is a real thing. Like, there's less remakes, there's less sequels, even the stuff that we didn't talk about as much, there's like some, you know, fun things in there. I'm not seeing a lot of like Jungle Cruises and, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean 5 sort of lurking on the list.
That's true. I mean, probably statistically we still talked about a lot of them, but I see your point that there's, you know, for like, every Freakier Friday there is Death of a Unicorn, so
Right. It's like we have the Avengers movies, obviously. We have some Disney reboots. The new John Wick movie, the new Megan, like the new Jurassic World, like those sort of seem like fun and interesting in a way.
Yeah.
That's less like, oh, the new Superman, which I think it does feel like money grabby.
No, it'll be fun to work through these. I mean, a slow slog through January, February, but hopefully made fun as we do episodes on one of them days.
Yes. So next week we'll be back talking about SZA and Kiki Palmer. I'm not really a SZA fan. I guess we'll talk about that next week.
Okay.
I don't know her music super well.
I'll send you a few good ones I think you'd like. I mean, have you tried?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. Say less. We don't want this on record.
Yes. Maybe I'll be a big fan by next week. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, I hope that you don't get cancer, Shelby, from your smoke inhalation.
Oh my gosh,
And thank you for letting us know that the LA fire is a big deal, as it turns out. Not everybody knew. And thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye.